As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
The Phil Hayes Show.
Welcome to the Phil Hayes Show. It's brought to you by The Athletic, along with us from The Square Ball. Dan here from The Square Ball, along with Michael and Phil here from The Athletic as well. We have gone ahead of the press conference this week. We'll talk about all that in just a minute or two. Work permits permitting. Phil, have you got your work permit through?
I have, yes. Oh. Yes, being Scottish, I had to go through the, I had to get governing body endorsement, yes.
Just a reminder, we're twice a week for the next month or so, Mondays and Fridays. Friday edition is where we generally reflect on the press conference, but it's been a special week this week, as we're going to discuss in a second or two. Monday is when we react to the weekend's game, so Phil and I will be back on Monday to talk about the game against Southampton. A reminder that the shows are free, but you can listen ad-free when you subscribe to The Athletic. Go to theathletic.com/LeedsPod. And of course, you find everything that Phil's written there as well and the chance to interact with Phil before and after the games. So we don't yet officially have a manager, do we, Phil?
Not officially, or not in the sense of work permit approved at this point. Usual timestamp. We surely are going to reach a point where we won't have to timestamp these. Surely after the appointment of Xavi Gracia, that will be it, and we won't have to be saying it's 10 o'clock on Thursday morning, and by the time you listen to this, it'll almost certainly be out of date, as the last three or four podcasts have been. But he was appointed Tuesday afternoon. Discussions went on after the Everton game. You asked on Monday, do you think they're going to have to do something this week? And the feeling was, yeah, we suspect they probably will do it. It had not gone well at Everton, and you just got the sense that forthcoming fixtures for Skubala as caretaker was going to become forthcoming fixture, stopping with Everton away. And it did just start to feel like there was too much pressure on him. It had gone from, can you handle a few games, to can you please keep us up and out of trouble in what is, you know, an even worse state than last season. So, you know, Gracia, that became quite serious Monday afternoon. By Tuesday, he was in the country and ready to go, in the sense of ready to agree the terms of his contract, get that finalised, subject to a work permit, which was always going to be the issue for him. Do you want me to go into the details of the work permit? Because it's quite complicated, but at the same time, very sort of relevant to why it's a bit of an issue for him.
Yeah, but before we get into that, do you know when his name first came into the frame?
Well, Leeds said that they'd been looking at him for a couple of weeks, right back to, you know, at the start of the search. I have to say that at the start of the search, there was certainly, the impression was not being given that somebody like Gracia was in the mix. They were talking about coaches who were in other jobs at the moment, in work. Areola, Rayo Vallecano being one, Slot at Feyenoord being another. And I mean, Gracia was there to be had last week before the Everton game. It wasn't as if he's just become available over the weekend. So it's not as if they wouldn't have been aware of him, and it's not as if they wouldn't have known who he was or known anything about him. But it did seem to me that the decision to reach out to him properly was a reaction to what happened at Everton on Saturday. There was no doubt at all last week that the plan was for Skubala to take Everton and Southampton and to go from there. And I think had those two games gone well, the hope of the club was that he could have seen them through to the end of the season, at which point you've got clear water, you've got no games. Clubs are far more amenable and flexible when it comes to approaches for their coaches. Coaches, I think, find it much easier to get out of contracts at that point. Areola would have been in a position to go. So, you know, in ideal circumstances, that would have been fine. But then they go to Everton and they play as they did. Didn't lay a glove on Everton at all. Lose the game, find themselves 19th. And I think the question had to be asked pretty quickly, Is it right? Is it sensible to leave this in Skubala's hands? Is it fair on him? Does it look sensible in a way which is going to placate the support?
Are you talking optics?
Optics, absolutely optics. Somebody else used that phrase this morning as I was speaking to them. I thought of you instantly. Does it look sensible? No, it doesn't. Is it going to keep the fan base happy? No, it isn't. Surely the decision had to be taken to bring somebody in. So as it stands at the moment, they've clearly had an issue over the past fortnight in teasing managers who are already in work out of that job and to Ellen Road. And I still feel that Iriola seemed to be very much top of the list. Couldn't get him out of Vallecano, can't get him out of Vallecano until the end of the season at the earliest. So at that point, you start to think about people like Nuno, for example, who is in Saudi Arabia, but who I think you could get feasibly. Other people who are mentioned, you know, Benitez, obviously out of work. Or somebody like Gracia, who has been available since his last job in Qatar last year. So by Monday afternoon, it was becoming pretty clear that Gracia was who they were speaking to. And by Tuesday morning, it was perfectly apparent that he was going to be appointed. But there was always going to be the issue of the work permit because, technically speaking, he doesn't qualify, which isn't to say that he won't get one. I think he will, but he doesn't qualify for one automatically.
The timeline of this, from the club's point of view, it doesn't quite add up, does it, to say that we've been speaking to him for a couple of weeks? Because it was fairly clear within a week or so, none of the preferred targets were available. It was also fairly clear last week that they expected Skubala to be in charge for Everton and Southampton.
Yes.
And then in the middle of that, you've got Schreuder seemingly almost being appointed and then not being appointed. And
yes.
Then Gracia, who seems the more sensible option, finally being appointed. We're in this weird panic zone in the middle between Schreuder not being appointed and Skubala having an absolute shocker against Everton. It just looks shambolic. And it seems like the club have almost tried to deliberately avoid doing the obvious thing. Because I've not seen anyone particularly being upset at this appointment. Everyone's kind of looked at it and gone, well, okay, fine. There's a certain sense to it, but it feels like the club sometimes are just desperate to not do the obvious thing.
I think at best you could meet them in the middle and say that Gracia might have been one of the people that they had down as somebody they could go for if other things didn't work out. But I don't think you can pretend that having looked at Schreuder, but more to the point, having gone for Skubala, that you were intending to appoint Gracia at this point. You were just merely waiting to lose at Everton first in order to do that. I had a chuckle at a tweet that was sent to Graham Smith after the Everton game, saying something like, it's presumably just been a smokescreen up to this point so we can point Gracia without anybody realising. And you're thinking, yeah, rather than appoint him last week, put in a caretaker to lose a game at Everton and then go for it the following week so that nobody realises. It has clearly been driven by circumstances. And I don't think, had it gone well at Goodison Park on Saturday, that we'd be sitting talking about Gracia coming through the door. But on the basis that it didn't go at all well at Goodison Park, I think it's a really sensible move. I think it had to be done. I felt like Skubala was more sensible than Schreuder because of the reaction to Schreuder. But we said at the time, giving it to Skubala was a big risk because of the shift from can you handle a couple of games to can you please keep us up? I actually feel with Gracia, and this is based on speaking to people who know a lot about him from his time at Watford, I actually think they've fallen on a pretty good coach, somebody with decent ability, decent ideas, decent potential. In no way am I going to stick my head out and say that it's going to work because it's so late in the season. But I think this is actually, given what's out there and what they could have done, I think it's quite a good appointment.
Is he better qualified than Marsh?
Well, interestingly, he isn't as qualified for a work permit. Marsh didn't have any work permit issues because of the previous jobs that he'd been in and the length of time that he'd been in them. With Gracia, he doesn't qualify automatically for one. This is a legacy of Brexit, means that it is harder now for foreign coaches to get work permits and visas when they come over to work in the English game. And if I just quickly go through the explanation of what has to happen, leagues across the world are split into different rankings, groups, effectively levels. So your band one divisions are Premier League, La Liga, Serie A and so on. And it goes down and it goes down. And a league like Qatar, which is where Gracia was last, doesn't help you to qualify for a work permit. It's too low a level. So essentially, over the past 5 years, as a coach, in order to get a work permit and to get GBE, governing body endorsement from the FA, you need to have worked for 24 months concurrently at a certain level, or you need to have had a combined total of 36 months over 5 years at a certain level. Gracia doesn't have that over the past 5 years, so we'll have to go through an exemptions panel. Exemptions panel is basically there to deal with any cases who don't qualify. And you'll probably remember that Bielsa had to go through an exemptions panel because, again, he hadn't worked enough in the previous period, the period that was covered by the rules, to qualify automatically. I think there was also an issue with whether or not he had the requisite coaching license, you know, UEFA Pro or equivalent, because he started his career so long ago. He got his visa and his permit, and nobody in their right mind was going to sit and say that a former coach of Argentina and Chile and Marseille and Athletic Bilbao and Lille wouldn't bring anything to the game, wasn't qualified to coach here. And you do have to kind of demonstrate that the coach that you're bringing in is going to contribute in a way that somebody based in Britain or British, someone who would automatically qualify for a work permit, wouldn't be able to do. I don't see them having a problem on that front, because Gracia has a background at Watford and also Valencia. He's been at Malaga. He's been at Rubin Kazan in Russia. He's been at a high enough level generally, and I think would be able to get the sort of support and statements that you need for these things to convince an exemptions panel that he should be granted a permit. But it means that it doesn't happen automatically, and it means that it takes a little bit of time.
Who makes up the exemptions panel, and how is the FA involved in this in relation to the government?
The panel is put together as and when one is requested. A club has to request one, because what will have happened will be that they will see through the criteria that Gracia doesn't automatically qualify. So therefore, they go to the FA and they ask for a panel, which is usually a three-man panel. And the FA will have people, usually football people, who will join that panel, will make it up and will make the decision. So again...
Was it Stuart Ripley who was on Bielsa?
Stuart Ripley was ex-Blackburn player, was one person who was on Bielsa's. Also Kenny Jackett, who former Millwall manager. People who in no way were going to sit and say, look, I don't think you can give one to this guy. You know, how does he qualify? And I think that I think they will feel the same about Gracia. I would be surprised if he hasn't already been through that process, and I would be incredibly surprised if they did reject him. But you need the governing body endorsement. You also then need to go through the visa process. That has to happen for the staff who he's bringing in, and the plan is to bring in staff with him alongside some others who are already at Thorpe Arch and will be part of the coaching team, Scubala included. So the club's plan is to have a press conference tomorrow, which would be Friday ahead of the Southampton game. The plan is certainly for Gracia to be in the dugout on Saturday, but naturally it is all work permit dependent. So I think it will... They're obliged, Premier League rules mean they're obliged to do a press conference, pre-match press conference before 2 p.m. tomorrow on Friday. So keep your eyes peeled for who's there. But I'm not sensing any particular stress about this when it comes to will he get a permit. This week it's just been about the timing of it and the attempt obviously to expedite everything to make sure that he isn't in charge for the game at the weekend.
Do you agree that it's poured a bit of oil on stormy waters, this appointment, in that everybody seems to have just kind of relaxed a little bit and exhaled? And do you think that's because this is objectively a good move, what we were saying before, that Leeds might have, by accident or by design, ended up on appointing a decent coach for the task that's at hand? Or is it just because everyone was getting so worked up to finally see somebody put in place, the sense of relief has come from that? Where do you think this one sits?
No, I don't think it's the latter, because that would have been the case with Schreuder, wouldn't it? If it was just a case of get somebody, get anybody, people would have seen Schreuder and said, okay, he might have been sacked by Ajax, but he is ex-Ajax, he is ex-Club Bruges, that'll do. People didn't say that. People looked at it and said, you know, he's not what we should be going for. You know, it's not what we want. I can't really remember seeing a backlash quite like it for an impending appointment since Hockaday. Really, I don't think. I mean, there's been confusion about other appointments. Maybe Steve Evans. I think Steve Evans is one where people said, wow. But with people like Milinic, what did you know about him? He actually had a decent record at Maribor. He was coaching qualifications and everything else. It wasn't a case of thinking that one's going to be blinding, but, you know, perhaps it's worth a go. I think with this one, it really was quite fiery, the response to it. You sometimes find that when... You know, in these circumstances, we obviously write at length about the things that go on. So this appointment with Gracia, we did a long piece on Tuesday after he was appointed. And you quite often find when things are going badly, results aren't working, that the reaction of people is, oh, look, fuck off. Like, you know, it's not good enough. It's not what we want, this, that and the other. But actually, when people read it, and when people, not just my piece, but other people's pieces that have been written as well, and looked into who Gracia was and what he'd done and what had been said about him at Watford, how it had played out from there, the feeling amongst everybody that Gino Pozzo had basically just done what Gino Pozzo does and given him the Pozzo treatment and binned him after four games into the season, seems really hard done to. And you know, you could find quotes, easily find quotes from players like Troy Deeney and others, Adrian Mariappa, who all seem to say, you know, we actually rated this guy. We thought he was good. And this is at Premier League level. You know, it's not like he was good in the Championship. He was good in the Premier League. So I think it's helped to make people feel that actually they've got a coach with ability and they've got a coach who has the nous and the confidence to properly have a crack at this. I don't think it changes the perspective of concern about 15 games to go, Leeds in 19th. I guess the acceptance that everybody has that this doesn't mean that they're not in serious, serious trouble. But this surely gives them more of a chance than leaving Skubala in charge, I feel. And Skubala will be part of the first team coaching staff. He is staying up there. And I don't think we should kind of pretend that some of what went on against Manchester United wasn't good. I just think Everton accentuated the amount of pressure that comes on you when actually it's in your hands to keep a club up.
I think the idea that this calms things down works until at least to sort of 4:45 on Saturday.
Well, it's last week repeated, isn't it? Appointing Skubala and saying, look, it went reasonably well against Manchester United in terms of the way we played. That attitude survives for as long as you get, until you get to Goodison Park and play poorly and lose and drop into the bottom three. And then suddenly nothing that's been said is of any relevance. And you're right about Gracia. I think Gracia probably has the ability, more ability than Skubala, to ride a bad result against Southampton. Although you dread to think what the table would look like if it is a bad result against Southampton at the weekend. But I think you would probably put more money on Gracia as opposed to Skubala to then start digging up results from elsewhere, whether or not it would be enough. But you're right. Again, the positive things or the constructive things that have been written and said about Gracia this week will not pale into insignificance, but will be somewhat watered down if it's a bad day on Saturday.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Sad news then to start off section two. We've just heard the news that John Motson has died, legendary commentator in this country, and the loss of another figure that we all heard throughout our lives growing up. Very sad news today.
It's funny because I didn't really grow up with John Motson so much, or not when I was young.
No TVs in Scotland?
No. It was all string and cups. You know, just waiting to hear what was happening from 100 miles away.
Staying in the outside toilet for warmth and all that.
Motson's voice was always the FA Cup final, which was, give or take, the only English game when I was growing up in the 80s that was reliably on the telly, let's put it that way. From time to time, I remember sitting watching that famous Liverpool-Arsenal game on ITV, the title decided in 89, but I'm certain that was Brian Moore, wasn't it? Rather than John Motson, who was always over on the BBC. So up in Scotland, you had people like Archie McPherson and Rob McLean, who did Sports Scene and did your Scottish football commentary. So those are the voices that I would really recognise more than Motson's in that era. But yeah, no, Motson was always the FA Cup final. And I suppose like all of you great commentators, had a massively distinctive voice, didn't he? You knew exactly who it was when he was talking, and you didn't associate him with anything else either. It was football for him right the way through. And I spoke to him for one article that I did on The Athletic, and it was actually about the run of games that Leeds and Arsenal had back in the 1990s.
So there was the FA Cup fourth round in 1991. Four games it took
Four games, not far off back-to-back. You know, it was just... Every 3 or 4 days, it seemed to be Leeds against Arsenal. So I phoned him because he commentated on some of them, and I said to him, you know, just wanted to ask you about these. And he said to me, listen, I genuinely don't have a clear enough recollection of them to be able to tell you too much about them. He said it will have been kind of strange at the time, but obviously I've done, you know, hundreds and hundreds of games, so I don't want to particularly pretend like I've got loads of colour to offer you. But we had a nice chat anyway, and he's that was the only time I'd ever dealt with him, only time I'd come across him. He just seemed like a lovely, lovely bloke, and just a massive, massive name in sports broadcasting.
I'm forgetting that you used to get the Except for Viewers in Scotland.
Yes.
Bit on the telly where you have a rerun of Taggart.
That's a bit of a throwback, isn't it? Yeah. The Bill.
But you know, yeah, Motson is one of those. He seemed like a veteran of it when I was first getting into football, which is, you know, 30 years ago now. And he was already the old head on the scene, wasn't he? There was him, Barry Davis, and I guess Brian Moore still around then as well. They were the kind of the big three as I was growing up. So yeah, it'd be strange not to hear him.
I have a feeling as well that you could probably fill Elland Road with people who've been inspired by him in some way, or people who've gone into broadcasting who, to some extent, have lent on some of what Motson has done in the past, or have had the chance to speak to him or take advice from him directly. So yeah, very sad.
Absolutely. Rest in peace, Motty. And we wanted to talk in this section as well about, it's a year since Marcelo Bielsa left Leeds United. 27th of Feb is when his job came to an end. How do you reflect upon the last 12 months?
Well, it's been pretty dreadful, isn't it? And from a football point of view, it's hard to paint it in any other way. And I think that was why, in the end, it was really difficult to say anything about Jesse Marsh other than this really needs to change, because it started to feel actually like quite a long time since Bielsa had gone towards the end of Marsh's reign. And it was in Premier League terms, you know, a year tends to be quite a long time for a head coach, as ridiculous as that sounds. And he'd had almost a full complement of games for a Premier League season, albeit across two. But, you know, it was the tightest of relegation fights last season, ending in that really narrow survival at Brentford. It's even worse now. And I think if you'd been totally honest and objective about this, you would say that the loss of direction, or certainly the loss of impetus, came before Bielsa had been sacked. It really was from the start of his last season onwards that it started to feel as if this kind of unstoppable train that was heading for great Premier League finishing positions, for new stadium, for just massive growth of a club, this kind of exponential development that had been ongoing ever since Bielsa had walked through the door, has started to slow, if not halt, completely. And I don't think the past 12 months have made anybody feel any different. To take the 18 months as a whole, from the summer of 2021 onwards, it's been decline, hasn't it? It's been a club going backwards rather than going forwards. And I still think there are ways, particularly with the planned takeover in the background, there are ways in which they can start to move forward at pace again. But as it stands at the moment, there's a hell of a lot to sort out. And I still don't feel that they've properly managed to move on from one period, the Bielsa period, to the next in a way that satisfies people and made people look forward.
I think the main thing for me of moving on was that we were told the playing styles would be conducive to one another and it would be a smooth transition. And actually, a year on, it looks like we've completely forgotten what to do with the football. In terms of the build-up stuff, it now is non-existent. Occasionally, you give it to someone like Nonto who does something good with it, but the build-up play and the playing through to defence to midfield to attack, it seems to have gone.
I spoke to Anders Palm yesterday. I've done a piece on Bielsa for tomorrow, for Friday morning, and rather than it being, you know, a reflection on him particularly or the last 12 months, because, you know, we wrote a lot about that and have written a lot about that, it's more about what next for him. You know, where is he going to appear next? What's his next coaching job going to be, if indeed he does take one? He was very close to Everton in January, talking to Bournemouth back in October, November time. There seemed to be no end of national associations, particularly on the other side of the water, South America and Central America, who are either vaguely keen on taking him on or extremely keen to take him on. But as yet, you know, a year on, he hasn't taken another job. He's been out of the game for that time. I spoke to Anders because you might remember that Bielsa was over in Norway to do one of the seminars that he does. He goes around the world and has done for years. It tends to fill the periods where he's not got a club, and sometimes he does it when he does have a club or has another job. But he has so little time that doesn't tend to happen. But when he's out of work, he will go to Holland. He was in Poland before Christmas, before the World Cup. He'll do things in Brazil, in Uruguay, other places like that. And he went to Norway. He watched the Norwegian team play. He did a presentation for an audience in which there were lots of coaching experts, analytical experts, and so on. It was meant to go on for 3.5 hours. It went on for 5. He ran them from what I was being told. He ran them through the 11 systems of playing football, and also ran them through this plan he put together for the 5-year development of a young footballer from the age of about 13 to 18. What you should do with them, how you should try and prepare them, the different ways in which you should handle a player who's been in an academy system or similar for ages, or a kid who has grown up basically playing on the streets or playing, you know, playing locally without that kind of academy structure. But after that, he went to meet with about 100 members of the Leeds United Supporters Club of Scandinavia, which everybody will know about and has been on the scene at Leeds for so long and like wildly committed to coming to games and everything else.
About 5,000 of them are there.
Yeah, and they're, you know, they're over all the time. I see Anders by the press box at virtually every single home game. You know, quite often just flies over and back in a day, and they're absolutely dead set on being around here. And he went to speak to them. You know, he had an audience of about 100, and he ran them through some slides, actually, of things that he'd been sent by the supporters after he'd left. He'd had about 1,800 letters and items that had arrived with him. So he did this kind of PowerPoint presentation where he was just showing them some of what had been sent to him. And the Luskos gave him an engraved Viking ship and everything else. And, you know, I think it was a nice occasion. And Anders sort of said to me, the way I always think of it is that he made us different to everybody else. I mean, I think Leeds are different to everybody else anyway, but I totally agree with what he says. He made us different as a professional club and a high-level club, made us different to everybody else. And he said, I kind of feel now like we are probably more than ever now in another relegation fight, two seasons. We're probably more like every other club than we've been, you know, since the BLC era started. And I think there is definitely something in that. But, you know, I guess there comes a time where, without forgetting about it, you have to move on in a competitive sense. And that, I guess, was the point of the piece that we've done on him, is what is going to be next for him? You know, where is he going to tip up?
Where did he go after flying in for Everton? Because no one seems to know.
Well, from what I'm told, having dug around at the Everton end, Everton on that, I think it was the Thursday when he landed at Heathrow. And Everton at that point were under the impression that the idea of appointing Bielsa was dead, and that it wasn't going to happen. He wasn't going to do it mid-season. I've been in touch with a few people in Argentina at the start of the week who'd said mid-season he just won't do it. He won't come in and take the, you know, they sort of said he won't come in and take the first team, you know, mid-season. But I don't think they were hinting at this idea that he might take the 21s. I think what they were saying was he just won't do it. So Everton at that point has started to move on towards the idea of naming Dyche as their next manager. And I don't think, from what I'm told, I don't think they even realised that Bielsa was due to arrive at Heathrow. I don't think they realised that he was flying in. So when they saw the pictures in the Daily Mail, I think they were as surprised as anybody. And the question was asked, why is he here? And the suggestion was that he would take charge of the under-21s to the end of the season. His staff would run the first team to the end of the season. And then in the summer, he'd be able to do what he really wants to do and what he's done in every single coaching job going back to the year dot or 1990, which is kick it off with a full pre-season. I have to say, I totally understand why that was not floating Everton's boat. And I totally understand why, if you had remained in trouble explaining why there was a very, very expensive and talented, capable head coach managing your academy while your first team was heading for the plug hole. Then
isn't he amazing?
So after that, I gather he's back in South America now. What he did straight afterwards, I'm not entirely sure. But at the Everton end, there was a lot of surprise about that and somewhat confusion too. But yeah, I mean, he is just like that, really. I mean, when he flew out from Leeds, he stayed around for a couple of weeks. He had to sort out, from what I was told, he had to sort out COVID measures in Argentina before he was able to return, as people had to at the time. So he was around for about a fortnight after he was sacked, and he was seen in the streets walking and listening to his headphones and everything else. But he travelled pretty light, and he left a load of possessions behind which were due to be shipped onto him at some point. And obviously, you know, Leeds had the idea, first of all, of a tribute to him outside Elland Road. There was talk of a cast iron bucket. And then when we interviewed Radrizzani in August, he said that they had written to him to ask if they could name the training ground after him, and I believe answer came there none. I think to date he has not replied to say yes.
In some of the recent flurry of tweets from Radrizzani, he mentioned, didn't he, that they've reached out several times now to Bielsa. So it sounds like he's been hitting a brick wall there anyway.
Well, it would have surprised me greatly, I have to be honest, had Bielsa written back and said, yeah, absolutely, you know, name the training ground after me. I mean, if you followed anything that he said about Newell's Old Boys naming the stadium after him, I think he was massively touched by it. And I don't think he wanted to actively resist it. But you got the sense that he would have felt more comfortable had they named it after somebody else. And when he paid for Newell's to build their training ground, it was named after Hoggy Griffith, you know, an old colleague of his and a long-time friend. And Bielsa's attitude was very much that, in the way that he tends to say these things, Griffith deserves recognition in the way that I don't. And he was saying to the Norwegian supporters that he met over in Oslo, the usual thing, you know, I don't deserve any of this adulation or admiration, but I'm very grateful for it. You know, I just shouldn't be getting it.
There was something you said recently, actually, I don't want to pick your brains about. It was when we were discussing Bielsa, I think in the last week or two, and you said you thought maybe he might have been minded to leave Leeds at the end of last season, had he seen it through to the end. Was that based on something, or was that just your opinion? Because it became clear in what happened afterwards. For example, Angus Skinner's programme notes spoke of a coaching transition, and they basically brought it forward by a few months, they said, when they brought Marsh in. That suggests that the club were going to look to make a change that summer. Yeah. Do you think Bielsa would have stayed, or did you have an indication that he would have stayed beyond last summer, or do you think he might have left?
Nobody could ever speak for him, but people around him, as we got, I remember somebody in particular in the week after the defeat at Goodison Park, coincidentally enough, indicating that they just felt by that stage, and it wasn't long after that that Bielsa was sacked, it was like a matter of days really, and indicating that they didn't think, even if it got through to the end of the season, that there was going to be a further extension to the contract. It hadn't gone well to that point. I think it was starting to become evident at the time, and is very evident now, that the relationship had broken down between him and the board, or had reached the least productive stage that it had been at any point since he'd taken over. So my gut feeling was that there would have been a change in the summer anyway.
Yeah, but I'm going to say, would Bielsa have stayed if that extension had been offered as well? I'm not asking you to put yourself in his shoes. I'm just wondering if you'd had any indication about that.
Had an extension been offered, I don't know. Perhaps he would have done. I think by February, nobody was really expecting an extension to be offered. People around Bielsa were unconvinced about whether he would want season five, given the way it had gone in season four. And clearly, Leeds in the background were starting to think about alternatives and Marsh. I don't know, is the honest answer. I really don't know what he would have done.
Given we've been on the hunt for a new manager and his name will inevitably always be linked, do you think he would ever come back? And do you think he should? No. I'm of the mind that you should never go back on these things.
No. Two reasons for that. Firstly, I agree with that. I think it would be very hard to do anything that exceeds what you already achieved. It would be incredibly easy to do things that, I guess, not clouded what went previously, but added to the conversation about what you contributed at the club. You know, because those 3 years were so good, it would be hard to do anything that would equate to that or to match up to that. I think you're at far more risk of underperforming in comparison. I also don't think, I mean, because I've seen people since Marsh went, and also in the period leading up to Marsh going, when it felt as if there would be a change, people saying everybody should just swallow the pride and get Bielsa back. But I don't think that's in any way feasible. I think because of the way it ended and because of the way the atmosphere was at the point when the decision was taken to remove him, with the regime there at the moment, I just see no way in which that could work. I mean, interestingly, Anders said that when he was over in Norway, they were talking about, he spoke briefly about how it ended at Leeds, about how disappointed he was and how sad he was. But he said that at no point was there really any criticism from Bielsa of anybody individually or of the club particularly. He just said that he would have liked a different ending.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Southampton at the weekend and the lesser-spotted 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday, which is exciting, isn't it? I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, this and Everton last weekend is our warm-up before, certainly before April, when it all goes mad again, doesn't it? That list of rearranged fixtures, by the time you got to the bottom of it, you couldn't really remember what was moving when or what might move yet. Even Bournemouth, it's like, this is subject to change. Thought, oh, tremendous, yeah.
At one stage, it looked like Jesse Marsh might have been coming back for this fixture. Are we glad in many ways that he's not? Not necessarily for, I don't know, fear of him getting one over on us so much as just it adds another layer of unnecessary tension and complexity to what has been a really difficult period anyway.
There would have been a hell of a lot to discuss, wouldn't there? There'd have been a lot to discuss at his pre-match press conference down at Southampton. There'd have been a lot to discuss after the game at Elland Road on Saturday, because you know that there would have been certain things going on which would have merited comment and
jumping over the table questions. And having a go at you.
Well, probably, yeah, yeah. Right, hand.
Do you think you were entirely fair to him, or unfair at all? Or
I think I was. Yeah, no, I do think I was. I don't doubt. In fact, I know that he thinks we were critical of him. He probably thinks that we didn't give him a fair crack of the whip. There were periods where, brief periods, it has to be said, where I thought it was looking promising. August in particular, the start of the season, I think was probably when it seemed to be most under control. But I couldn't see anything other than another scrape with relegation coming at this rate. And I have to say, I don't think I'm alone there. You know, I think if you ask around, there are an awful lot of people who were unconvinced by what was going on. And depending on what Gracia does, and these are not great circumstances to be coming into, but the contrast between what he does and what Marsh does and whether it works, how it works, I think will give us a better indication of the potential of the squad. For example, you know, whether the squad should have been playing better and getting better results. And I think that it certainly should have done. And I think towards the end, Marsh accepted that himself. But no, I mean, we were never, certainly at The Athletic and me individually, we were never wildly complimentary about what was going on from any point. And I said to you previously, this is easy to say now, and I don't think we're necessarily saying it at the time because he did keep the club up. But I look back at a lot of the games at the back end of last season, and I do think that tactically, some of them beg the question of whether or not it was right to proceed with him.
I did want him back for this game, I have to say.
Oh, really?
If only so we could play that ball to the far post and rattle in many an easy goal, because that did seem a way of doing it. But I wanted him in because I fundamentally don't think he's that good. And I thought he would have given Southampton a fair chance of going down.
Well, there's an interesting parallel with what happened with Bielsa, because one of the things I said this at the time it happened, one of the arguments that continues to go round in circles is, would Bielsa have kept us up or would we have gone down? And you can't prove it either way, because he left and we were, what, you know, 17th, which, you know, it's right on the, it's tiptoes on the trapdoor stuff, isn't it, that? So we'll never know, but that argument will forever persist until we get onto something substantial again, like when we start having forward momentum again, when people will be able to forget about the argument.
Yeah.
Because at the minute, we are still stuck in that same headspace of Marsh came in to replace Bielsa and we haven't gone forward. And you said, as you said earlier, Phil, if anything, we've gone backwards a little bit. But
well, I think the point is that if you...
I was just going to say that actually, had he gone to Southampton, you would have actually had a real world example of how the rest of the season would have gone almost by proxy at Southampton, wouldn't
it? It's a good point, actually, yeah. Because I think the point is that if you are as close to relegation as Leeds were last season and you get away with it in the circumstances that they did, it absolutely facilitates the argument that, well, Bielsa might have got us to this number of points as well, because it wasn't as if Leeds surged towards 50. You know, they were absolutely clinging on right at the end. But if, you know, if they make nothing of Everton and Southampton, I mean, Marsh, for example, could sit and say, I would have given us a better shot at Goodison Park than we had in the end under Skubala, that he could say, I think we would have played better there than they did. And if, you know, if Leeds end up going down or if they survive by a really narrow margin again, then it does kind of leave the door open to saying, well, maybe it wouldn't have been any different and maybe they would have got away with it. I think the problem is, and this is a Premier League thing, this is an elite sport thing. If you have a setup where somebody's been there for a year and the best you can say is we might just be able to get away with this, then it doesn't really encourage you to stick with it, does it? It makes you feel as if it motivates you to change. It motivates you to think of, you know, going in a different direction. You said it's, you know, a good thing that he's not in charge of Southampton. And I know what you mean, because it takes away some of the, I guess, what might have been a bit of a circus round about the fixture. On the flip side, there are good things being said about Ruben Sellers down at Southampton, the man who stepped in as caretaker there. And as people will have seen, delivered win over Chelsea last weekend.
Yeah, but everyone does that, so, you know.
Yeah, true. but I have a feeling that Southampton might be a relatively useful team during Sellers' time as caretaker. I don't know if it'll be enough to keep them up, but like I say, a lot of good things being said about him, and it might be that they've fallen on somebody there who's able to do what they need him to do through the back end of the season. So I wonder actually whether Sellers being in charge as opposed to Marsh makes this a more difficult game.
Maybe. I mean, there's no way to know, is there?
Not at all. No, there really isn't.
I mean, as for the work permit situation, assuming it does get resolved, and it's now 10:44, still no movement on that. If it gets resolved, how much of an opportunity will Javi Gracia have to implement his ideas and his style? Do you think maybe he's been... I mean, the Weatherby railway path runs right next to Thorpe Arch. It's a beautiful footpath. He could be walking up and down there, peering in through the trees, just watching what's going on at Thorpe Arch, maybe, as he just awaits some news. You know?
As a tourist.
As a tourist.
Well, obviously, everybody obeys the rules strictly in these circumstances.
Have Leeds United been training a lot indoors this week, do we know?
But you would be amazed, really, wouldn't you, if, say, for example, Skubala is on the training pitch. Because, you know, Grassi isn't allowed to take training, minus a work permit. But you would be surprised if the training that Skubala, for example, was doing did not feature some of the tactical ideas that Gracia might be thinking of ahead of Southampton at the weekend. I mean, it stands to reason, doesn't it? It does make it tricky, definitely. And without a doubt, a full week of having Gracia in the door would have been preferable to the kind of last minute thing with the work permit. But at the same time, it doesn't need to be an obstacle to a good result at the weekend. I think what the impression seems to be that the work permit will get sorted. They definitely don't want a scenario on Saturday where he can't actually be involved in the game. You know, that would not be ideal at all.
Front row of the West Stand.
Yeah, sitting right behind the dugout. Can abuse Sellers in one moment. He can he can support Skubala in the next. It's kind of strange, isn't it? Because obviously Southampton have changed manager. They've got Sellers. You've got Garcia in here who's still waiting for his work permit. And in amongst the chat about all that, you find yourself not talking about the fact that it's 19th against 20th in the table, and that this is a massive game. I mean, it was interesting to me that when Gracia did his final presentation to the club and his interview and presented to them about what he was going to do, he'd reviewed some of the recent matches, as you'd totally expect, but he'd also gone over Chelsea-Southampton last weekend. Because it was his way of saying to the club, look, I totally understand how vital this game is at the weekend. And I want to show you that I'm already in the process of thinking about how we beat Southampton, you know, what they do, what they did with Sellers, how they played, why we won't be giving away free kicks 20 yards out and so on. You know,
that record itself is there, isn't it? Because he needs one more to equal. Is it equal or beat Beckham's record? That's James Ward-Prowse.
It's one more to equal it, isn't it? And I have to say that if stupid free kicks outside the box on Saturday should carry the death penalty, really. Everybody's got to be so
harsh, Phil.
I remember somebody saying, because he scored free kick before as Ward-Prowse against Leeds for Southampton. And I remember reading a piece in which somebody was saying that free kicks for him at a certain distance are the equivalent of penalty kicks, because he is that deadly and that accurate, and he absolutely is.
That's not fair, is it?
It's not fair, no. No, it should be banned, really. It should have a banned list of people who aren't allowed to take free kicks. But I think, you know, discipline is crucial, and it's got to be part of the game plan, you know, is be really, really clever and savvy about what you do. Don't give away, don't give away stupid things. But we could come up with that, couldn't we? We could say to the players, don't foul outside the box because Ward-Prowse is going to ping it in the top corner. But I think tactically, what Gracia really wanted Leeds to see was that he knew about Southampton. He knew how he was going to handle this game, that he appreciated the magnitude of it and how crucial it was.
And if he supplied that PowerPoint to Skubala as a gift, maybe, just had a nice chat about tactics and some ideas.
Or if somebody at Leeds happened to have filmed it on the phone and then sort of, you know, passed it on by accident.
All it needs is one of those all-in-one glasses and moustache sets, and he can be there in Thorpe Arch, as far as I'm concerned.
The funny thing is that it's you know, it's a kind of employment thing, that, rather than a football thing. If he gets a work permit, whatever else, in no way would Southampton have any issue with the fact that Gracia had been trying hard to implement ideas and to give messages across. But you have to do it properly. You know, you've got to go through the official channels. Footballers, managers don't just get to come here and work, unlike other people. They've got to.
Can they volunteer?
Volunteer? Now, there's a thought. There's a thought.
Like going to a kibbutz and volunteering for the summer.
Or maybe he's here to do a BTEC or something. Get him on a
work experience with Skubala. Yeah.
Yeah. He's technically doing like pitch management
or
something.
Yeah, he's come to learn about futsal.
Oh, dear. Let's hope it sorts itself out.
Yeah, fingers crossed. What do you expect from this game? It's funny, like, I don't know why. I'm not going to necessarily. Yeah, I am going to do.
No,
yeah, we're going to win.
Michael. Get him.
You said this against Everton.
No, do you know what it is? No, it's not. This is not the we've got one in us, because this doesn't qualify for that same criteria, because this is a game we should be winning, because I would say we have a better team than Southampton, although it hasn't shown itself too much this season.
I don't think it's a game they should be winning. I think it's a game they have to win. I think there's a difference.
Both things can be true, Phil.
I don't think at the moment you can match up Southampton and Leeds and say, irrespective of individual players or whatever else, and say Leeds should be winning this game. It's just a game they have to win.
I don't know. We've got a good team in there somewhere, I think. It just needs somebody to bring it out of them.
It'll be interesting to see if he does anything with the formation, because he did favour a 4-4-2 at Watford, and it's something we've not actually seen at Leeds for a very long time.
Yeah. Interestingly, though, when you ask people about it, it kind of morphed from time to time into 4-2-2-2, would you believe it? But I think in a different way to Marshall. He would play with two deep-line holding midfielders, but they had kind of license to get forward and to help attacks. And then your midfielders in front of them would quite often be narrowly inverted, but it wasn't as if they weren't allowed to rotate into different areas.
When you say narrowly inverted to the layperson, what does that mean? That means
narrowly
basically,
inverted
so basically
means
that, you can operate with width, but then you tend to cut inside.
Yes. So if you had a 4-4-2, for example, and Southampton, I think, did that at Chelsea at the weekend, and I think we'll probably do that at Elland Road on Saturday too, you'd have two central midfielders as you'd understand them, and then to the side of them, you would have two additional midfielders, usually wingers, but you know, not always. And by definition, or by the structure of the field, those two players, wingers, midfielders, whatever, are going to be in wide areas. Whereas the system that Gracia used could quite often move to a position where you had two central midfielders who were deep lying, and you almost effectively had, in certain moments of games, two midfielders directly in front of them, and then two forwards, Deeney, A and other, in front of them. So, you know, as people have termed it, the penis formation, yeah? Mm-hmm. But I don't think playing without width was in any way as much of a philosophy of Gracia's as it was of Marsh's. I mean, we all saw the PowerPoint points from the dressing room on the wall in Elland Road, where it said, you know, minimal width. You know, that was kind of a bedrock of the way that Marsh was playing. But you're right. I mean, if it is Gracia's team and he's able to do things properly, and he's in the dugout on the touchline and everything else, then that'll be one of the points of interest. And I think it is going to be one of the things that will be most fascinating to follow, because having criticised Marsh and having seen, you know, me and a lot of other people think that there needed to be a change of head coach, because there needed to be a change tactically, this is where you start to see how this squad can change tactically, if they can play better, how they can play better, and how that's achieved.
If we're going to match up the Watford thing, I guess you'd go Nonto and Bamford up front, but we've not actually seen Nonto up front, have we, to this point?
And I quite like that. I do like the idea of him cutting in from the left. It does seem to work with him, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does.
What about on the right, though? I mean, and where does Harrison fit in this? So maybe do you put Nonto up front and put Harrison on the left to cut in? Does Aronson feature on the right-hand side? Because I think you wonder if maybe this, the kind of inverted winger thing where he's cutting in and tucking in almost as like another number 10,
yeah,
might work for him.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, they have options, don't they? They have Ruta as well, who did not have a good cameo at Goodison. Although I'd say again, I don't think anybody played well at Goodison. I don't think there was a single big performance from Leeds in that game when there really needed to be. He's somebody they could do with getting up to speed really, really quickly. I think whatever the formation is, I feel like you find space for Nonto in it. There are others who would be easy picks. Tyler Adams, for example. I think in a lot of positions, it's pretty questionable, isn't it? Aronson hasn't had a great season. There are others who have been trying to find form, haven't really been in form. So yeah, he would have decisions to make, Gracia. But from reading about him and speaking to people about him, he strikes me as a pretty savvy, switched on guy. So I think he'll be pretty good at looking at the squad understanding and appreciating what he's got and working out pretty quickly what to do with them.
That's one of the endorsements that kind of comes with him as a coach, because I read quite a bit off the back of the appointment, and like you, I'm sort of quietly pleased by him coming in. He seems to be a guy who very quickly gets switched onto what he's got within the squad and how best to deploy them. And he may even tweak the formation, because he's used a 4-3-3 in the past and a 4-2-3-1 as well. So maybe it's a case of not changing too much, but just giving them some different ideas and a bit more structure.
There is an international break coming up, so there is going to be a point at which some concerted coaching will be easier, although obviously you then lose players to international squads and everything else. So it's not as if you have the full complement there. But in the short term, and obviously there's an FA Cup game about to drop as well, it's not as if, you know, time for training is going to be vast and endless. He's going to have to be pretty quick in doing and changing what he wants to change. But yeah, I'm like you, really. And obviously it needs to go well, because Leeds need to stay up. That's the first protocol and that's the first target for him. But Leeds described his contract as flexible when he came in. I don't doubt at all that that will mean its initial basis to the end of the season, with either an obligation or an option at the end of it to extend if things go well. And I think if things do go well, then they will absolutely be minded to extend his deal if they're not actually obligated to do it in those circumstances, which they might well be. It feels as if with this one, you know, I was saying with Skubala, ideally he gets them through to the end of the season. I think with Skubala, the intention would always have been he holds the reins for as long as we need him to, and then we appoint, you know, that would have been the strategy. Whereas with Gracia, I think they're already saying to themselves, if this goes well, this is the sort of thing that we would want to stick with.
Without a press conference, do we know about injuries for this one? Verba and Sinisterra in particular?
I would be surprised if Verba's involved. He obviously had his shoulder injury, which he tried. We saw him on the pitch trying to pop it back in, and he played on to half time, but he did not look comfortable and he didn't have a good game. And I don't know if that was because it was affecting him and you know, awkward to play with. I'd be surprised if he was involved. Yeah, I don't think so.
Sinisterra was sort of just on the fringes of it, wasn't he?
Yeah.
If we go back to the pre-Everton press conference, that he was a little bit further behind some of the other players, but he was not too far away.
Yeah, so it can be miles off, but we could really do with a press conference to be sure about that.
And what I was going to say before about the idea of not, we've got one in us, but I feel a bit I feel a bit more confident and calm now there is somebody.
There's a bell next to Michael. Hit it.
And what I was saying is my feelings going into this are a lot less fraught. As soon as we heard that Gracia had been appointed,
yeah,
I don't know much about him, to be perfectly honest, apart from what I read off the back of his name emerging, but I read what I read and I felt more confident once I read it, and I thought, he looks like a capable pair of hands, and it's just calmed me down going into this fixture, to the extent that, I don't know, am I almost looking forward to this game on Saturday?
You can't help but look forward to these games, because this is really what football comes down to, which is those games where they just feel of the utmost importance, that you can't, you know, you do get games, if you follow football for years and years, you get games that are dull, games that don't particularly inspire you beforehand, games that you go to anyway because you're in the habit of doing it, but you can come away from them feeling like you've just gone through your usual football routine, whereas this is totally different because there's so much riding on it. There's so much riding on it for the board, there's so much riding on it for the squad and the crowd as well. It will be massively, massively tense. I agree with you that Gracia's appointment has helped, because it seems to me that the image you get of the club at the moment is of less authority than there needs to be. You know, not really at the moment this clear vision or clear voice saying, this is what needs to be done, this is what we're doing, everybody get on with it. You know, it's felt over the past 2 weeks like it's been shifting sands, and this bounce between, right, we're sticking with Marsh, no, we're getting rid of Marsh, we're going for Areola, can't get him, we'll have a go at Slot, no, it's not happening. Here's Schroeder, better get rid of him before, you know, he gets burned at the stake. And then, you know, Skubala's caretaker for fixtures, then it's one game, and now Gracia's in, which is, it feels like it's absolutely for the best. And I think, had we gone through this week with kind of noises in the background that the club was still thinking about appointing somebody with credentials like Gracia's, or, you know, somebody who'd been a head coach before, but then ended up with Skubala, and you just kind of, I guess, sort of ambled into this game or rolled into it, wouldn't have done anything for the atmosphere. It wouldn't have done anything for the mood around it, and it might have done nothing for the result either. Whereas I think Elland Road will be absolutely wild at the start on Saturday. You know it, I know it, it will be.
Could be Wilder at full time.
It could be. We'll see.
Isn't this club intoxicating? It's just another fascinating weekend in the life of Leeds United.
Intoxicated or toxic? It depends.
We'll know it about 10 to 5, Michael, is when we'll have an answer to that. So we'll be back on Monday, you and I, Phil, to unpack all this and see where it goes.
I was sat at Goodison Park at halftime, and Liam Twomey, who covers Chelsea for us, was tweeting about Chelsea at halftime against Southampton. And I can't remember now exactly what it said, but it was something along the lines of, you know, just abject misery around Stamford Bridge. Everybody annoyed, everybody unhappy. And I've been meaning to tweet this for a while, but I did just tweet saying, with the exception of about three clubs, I don't think anybody's enjoying this season. Everybody in the Premier League seems to be hating it, frustrated. Even Newcastle are starting to go backwards now. You've got Arsenal who think the title might be theirs, so they're really enjoying it. You've got Brighton and Brentford who are going nicely, and Fulham who are already up. So, you know, there's your happy camp. Everybody else just seems to be desperate to get to the end of it.
And we go again. Absolutely love it. TheAthletic.com/LeedsPod to sign up for The Athletic, and you can get in touch with Phil on there as well. Read all his stuff. Back on Monday. We'll speak to you then.
The Phil Hayes Show.